the podcast from Belmont Chapel in Exeter, sharing the story, living the life. For more information, go to belmontchapel.org.uk.
Welcome to our new series in the Book of Exodus. We're on week 2, and we're looking at Exodus chapter 2, verse 11, through to chapter 3, verse 10. You may want to pause the recording now and just read over the text before I continue. Well, I made a really stupid mistake over the Easter holidays. I watched the two Jack Reacher films on Netflix. How often have you heard it said, never see the film after reading the book? There is no way that Tom Cruise can ever be a credible Jack Reacher. But more importantly, films generally miss the author's descriptive commentary that runs along the side the action in a book. Now, this commentary helps explain why the main characters behave as they do. It reveals their psychological makeup, their motives, their character traits. And the films focus too much on the action and not enough on the characters themselves. Well, this memory came to mind as I prepared this talk, because it is easy for us to over-focus on the action described in the Book of Exodus. Yes, the Book of Exodus does read like the script of an action movie in many places, but the central message of the book is revealed through the main characters when you stop and explore their character rather than just their actions, what makes them do what they do rather than just what they do. The text we're looking at tonight helps us to really get under the metaphorical skin of two of the central characters whose activities shape the whole of the Book of Exodus, Moses and God. So let us start by examining Moses and God as revealed through Exodus 2 verses 11 through to 25. I wonder if you have ever stopped and thought about what it must have been like for Moses to live through all those early life experiences. We know that our early life experiences really shape how we view ourselves and how we make sense of our place in the world. They help form our self-identity. And Moses' early life, summarised in Exodus chapters 1 and 2, was certainly complex, with him living amongst three diverse cultures, Egyptian, Hebrew and Midian. I am sure there were times when Moses asked himself the very natural human existential questions. Who am I? Where do I fit in? What am I going to do with my life and where? And for people who grew up in a country different from their own cultural or ethnic or historical or religious background, there's an accompanying question. Where do I call home? And by home here, they mean something more than just geography. Home here refers to the community from which they draw their identity. Home refers to the people who talk and think the same way and who hold the same values. The community where they do not stand out as being different, where they are accepted for who they are. Well, let us pause and ask ourselves that question. Where do I call home? Your answer will help shape how you relate to those around you and how you respond to your life circumstances. It will give shape to your hopes and expectations of your future. Now let me spend a few minutes telling you about Eddie. He was a fellow Christian and theology student I met 25 years ago. Ethnically, he was South Korean, but he was actually born and raised in the USA. He spoke American English outside of his house, for school and for work. But his parents' first language was Korean. When visiting South Korea, he was called American, and when in America, he was called South Korean. His parents did not always understand what he said and did. He was not Korean enough for them. But to his neighbours and work colleagues, he was not American enough. He did not fit in any neat box. He was neither fully American or fully Korean. He did not feel at home in America, and he did not feel totally at home in South Korea. Now, when I read about Moses' life in chapters 1 and 2, it reminds me of my chats with Eddie. In verse 11, Moses went out to where his own people were. He left his Egyptian life experience, his experience of palaces, of luxury and prosperity, and he saw the Hebrews and their life experience of poverty, slavery, pain, and suffering. So was Moses an Egyptian or a Hebrew, or both, or neither? Where did Moses call home? Well, the narrative continues with his reaction to the Egyptian beating a Hebrew slave. Since Moses killed the Egyptian in verse 12, we might assume, as the narrator does, that Moses has chosen which culture and which people to call home. But verses 13 to 14 inform us that the Hebrews did not necessarily accept him. The language of ruler and judge seems to suggest that he was seen as part of the ruling powers and not a member of the subjugated people. Well, I'm guessing that Moses did not expect that response. The people he chose to identify with, who he protected, are not exactly welcoming him with open arms. And it gets worse. In verse 15, we read that there is no going back for Moses, no return to the Egyptian community. The Pharaoh himself, that personification of Egypt, has rejected him and seeks to kill him for being disloyal to his adopted home. So with no apparent home in Egypt, Moses flees and settles in another entirely different potential home, Midian, as we read in verse 15. Now in Midian, Moses seems to have found a new life, certainly a very different one from his previous experience. He moves from Egyptian royalty to nomadic shepherd. And we end part one of our look at Moses in verse 22. Here it says, Zipporah gave birth to a son, and Moses named him Gershon, saying, I have become a foreigner in a foreign land. For those of you who have had the privilege to have children, think about how you chose their names. Was it simply that you liked the sound of the name? Did the name remind you of someone you knew in the past? Was it a family name passed down through the generations? In the ancient Near East, names had important functions. There were strict traditions about how and when children were named. Moses summarizes his life experience to date through his firstborn's name. Moses creates a living and permanent record of his life. I have become a foreigner in a foreign land. Well, actually, the grammar of the phrase is a little ambiguous. If you have the NIV translation of the Hebrew in front of you, then you will see that what I have just read, I have become a foreigner in a foreign land. But other translations, such as the English Standard Version or the New American Standard Bible, have, I have been a sojourner in a foreign land. And the New Revised Standard Version has, I have been an alien residing in a foreign land. So while the NIV seems to suggest that Midian is the foreign land that Moses is referring to, other translations seem to suggest that Moses saw even Egypt as a foreign land as well. In other words, Moses tells us through his son's name that he has still not found a home. He hasn't found a home from where he draws his own identity, a sense of place in the world. It is not the land of his birth, and it doesn't look as if Midian is his home as well. I do wonder how Moses would introduce himself to someone he met for the first time. How would he describe himself? How do you describe yourself when you meet someone for the first time? What shapes your self-identity? What do you hang your identity on? What makes you, you? In chapter 2 of Exodus, we see Moses describing himself as a stranger, a foreigner, and as an alien. I wonder how much we should feel at home, and how much we should feel a stranger living in and around Exeter. Especially as we live within a broad culture whose values have been shaped by post-Enlightenment, 18th century, atheistic philosophical thinkers. Where do we as Christians call home? Now Peter, in his first letter in the New Testament, calls on the Christian community to not draw their identity from the culture they are surrounded by. Listen to his words in 1 Peter 1 verse 17. So you must honour God while you live as strangers here on earth. And again in 1 Peter 2 verse 11. Dear friends, you are foreigners and strangers on this earth. Paul's letter to the Ephesians focuses on the Gentile believers being welcomed home using the language of citizenship, in keeping with Paul's Greco-Roman audience. In Ephesians 2, verse 19, we read, "You Gentiles are no longer strangers and foreigners. You are citizens with everyone else who belongs to the family of God." And Jesus himself uses the language of home. Listen to John chapter 14, verse 23. Jesus replied, "Anyone who loves me will obey my teachings. My Father will love them, and we will come to them and make our home with them." So for Christians, home is not a geographical location necessarily, but the experience of living in the presence and under the authority of God. Eddie, who I mentioned earlier, clearly understood this. Eddie felt at home wherever he lived because he drew his identity from being a child of God. But it is clear from our Exodus text tonight that Moses struggled to feel at home. Now after verse 22, the story of Moses pauses for three further verses before continuing. Exodus 1 and 2, in a way, act as a prologue to the rest of the book. It is the backstory which helps explain and set the scene to the central plot of the whole narrative. The three verses at the end of chapter 2 introduce our second main character in the book of Exodus. They introduce God. I don't believe these three verses flow chronologically on from verse 22 in the narrative. They are a parallel commentary offering another viewpoint on what has already taken place in chapters 1 and 2. So far, chapters 1 and 2 have revealed Moses and the Israelites' perspective on life in Egypt, but now we get to see God's perspective. What do these three lines tell us about the character or nature of God? Well, firstly, that the God of the Israelites is not a distant or remote God. He is not a God who does not know what's going on in the world. Verse 24 tells us that he heard their ongoing cries of anguish. And secondly, we're reminded that God is committed to the Israelites. The covenant he made in the past with Abraham back in Genesis 15 and 17 still applied. The NIV translation in verse 24 may imply that God has forgotten about his covenant until the cries had reminded him. But the literal Hebrew translation is, God knew his covenant. So for me, verse 24 reminds us that God knew his suffering people were his covenant people. And this leads to the third observation from verse 25, that God was concerned about them. God was interested in what was happening in their lives. So these three brief sentences reveal God's character or nature. They remind us that God is not some impersonal power, but that God is relational. He is interested in human life. God is personable. So Exodus 1 and 2 introduces Exodus's two central characters, Moses and God. We learn important truths about what makes them tick. Information that may be missed if we only focus on the action scenes in this book. Moses is a stranger, foreigner, an alien who is looking for a home. God, the covenant-forming God who promised to provide a home, cares about his people. So now we move into the next section of the book of Exodus. And you may want to pause here and read Exodus 3 verses 1 to 10 again before carrying on with my commentary. In Exodus 3, our two central characters metaphorically meet face to face. And in this encounter, we learn more about them. Moses is on the move again in verse 1 and ends up on God's mountain and before the burning bush. Moses appears to have no expectation at all of meeting God. Even when he sees the burning bush in verses 2 and verse 3, Moses does not know what is going to happen. Perhaps he's accepted that in this life he would always be a foreigner and away from home. Though it's not explicitly said in the text, perhaps he's forgotten about the covenant God had made with his forefathers. I wonder, had all his problems and issues early in life led him to reject or forget about the God of his fathers? Had the difficult struggles in life suggested to him that he was all alone and that God is not interested in him? Perhaps you yourself have experienced difficult times in your life, when life looks dark, when you felt cut off and alone. Perhaps, like me, during my own dark times, you've been tempted to think that God is not there or that God does not care. The book of Exodus teaches that while Moses may well have left God behind, God has not left Moses behind, and it should be an encouragement for us as well. Chapter 3, verse 4 onwards expands on what we have already learnt about the character of God in chapter 2. So far we have seen that God knows what is going on in the lives of his people, that he has made covenant promises about giving them their own home, that God is concerned for his covenant people's welfare. Now the holiness comment in verses 5 and 6, along with the location of the mountain of God beyond the wilderness and the symbolism of fire, would all remind ancient listeners of Exodus that God's geographical home was set apart from ordinary human life. No wonder Moses is afraid. He has wandered into God's home. But there is something even more shocking in this passage. God is behaving very differently compared to how other ancient gods were said to behave. Typically, the ancient Near Eastern gods had to be bribed to act. Offerings had to be made to encourage the gods to be involved in human life. Why? Because the ancient Near Eastern gods were not interested in humans. They ignored humans most of the time and did not care what happened to them. The gods lived separate lives and had to be encouraged to take notice of people. But this God, the God of Abraham, Isaac and Jacob, is shocking, because that God is interested in humans. And this interest is clearly more than just being curious about them. In verse 8, God chooses to rescue the Israelites from Egypt. He chooses to honour the promise he has made with Abraham, honour his covenant agreement. He acts to bring his people home, not simply to a physical land, but into a special relationship with him. God takes the initiative. God chooses to involve himself. God chooses to come down and metaphorically get his hands dirty. Now Moses must have been absolutely stunned by this declaration at this encounter with God. For us looking back at the book of Exodus from the 21st century, for us who know what happened in the years, decades, centuries following this meeting in the Mount Sinai, we can easily miss how radical this passage is. Hearing that God is launching a rescue mission to bring his people home is as radical to Moses as Jesus' claim to be God was radical to first century Jews. And there is one further important truth raised by this text. In verse 10, God chooses to work through Moses. Yes, we all know that God can work directly in the world. The greatest witness to this, of course, is the incarnation, when Jesus came, died and rose again. But so often in the Bible, we read of how God invites people to join with him, that he is willing to work through people and with them. And many, if not most of the people God chooses to work with and through, are not always those who perhaps we would choose. As Nick mentioned last week, God often chooses the powerless to speak truth to power. And Moses was certainly not well regarded by both the Egyptians and his own Israelites. But he is invited to be God's agent to free God's people. Well, tonight we have met two of the central characters of the book of Exodus. And in our time together, we've learned that Moses was a stranger, a foreigner, an alien looking for a home. And that God, the covenant-making God, remained faithful to his covenant by initiating his rescue plan to provide a home. The book of Exodus reveals the rescuing God, whose rescue plan ultimately leads through the cross of Jesus to recreation with the new heaven and the new earth and an eternal home for God's people. So what will you take away from this passage tonight? What will strengthen you this week as you journey through the normal ups and downs of life? Let me continue my story about my friend Eddie. When he graduated, he returned to America with a clear vision to help young adults searching for somewhere to call home. Eddie knew that as a Christian, he would, in some sense, always be a foreigner in the world, and not just because he was Korean-American. But equally, he knew he had somewhere to call home, God's kingdom, which he experienced in part now, as revealed by God's Holy Spirit working in his life and through the church community he belonged to. Over the years, I've lost touch with Eddie, but Eddie, to me, lived out the truth which the book of Exodus reveals to us. He knew our true home as Christians is living in the presence and under the authority of God, no matter where we live geographically, and he wanted to help others find this home. Well, I need to get a new passport soon, and my new one will be dark blue, not burgundy. But actually, I'm not that bothered about the colour, because my true citizenship, my true home, is in the kingdom of God. The passage we've studied tonight encourages me, because the same caring and rescuing God is still at work in his creation today, by his Spirit bringing his people home. If you are a follower of Jesus, then you know that our caring and rescuing God walks with you and me into whatever this week holds. And if that is not you, because you empathise more with Moses, that you feel a stranger and a foreigner on this earth, then why not continue to journey with us as we carry on into the book of Exodus, where you can learn more about the rescuing God of Christianity. The God who offers all strangers and foreigners and aliens a home with him. So thank you for listening tonight. Now may God bless you in the coming week ahead.